If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Another day, another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Garrettson and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find them in doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. Also, a shout out to Active Family Chiropractic. If you're dealing with any neck, back, shoulder, or any type of pain, go in today and schedule an appointment. Their office is located on 135th and Antioch in Overland Park, Kansas. Or just give them a call at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. Stop dealing with those nagging pains that keep you up at night and call Active Family Chiropractic today. So I thought of something interesting last night while watching the Kansas City Royals and San Francisco Giants play in the Bay Area just down the street from a game we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show, Game 5 of the NBA Finals. But I found something and it caught my eye. Because it's something that's been reoccurring. It's happened all season. We've talked about it on the show. We've talked about it many times on the show. This does involve Cal Eldred. So if you're tired of hearing about Cal Eldred, then I guess I don't know what to tell you. Because we are going to talk about Cal Eldred in the opening segment. In fact, we even touched on it a little bit yesterday when talking about this pitching staff. But through two innings last night, the first two innings, Brady Singer looked about as good as he had all season long. I believe, and through the first two innings, he had thrown five changeups. He was comfortable with it. His slider was on. His two-seamer had some run to it. Brady Singer looked good for two innings. And then after the Royals take the lead in the top of the third off Alex Wood, I mean, again, it felt too good to be true that the Royals would be able to hold that lead for long. They haven't been able to hold any lead all season, basically. Even six-run leads in the eighth inning, as they've already blown one of those games before. But in the bottom of the third, this is what caught my eye. So Brady Singer, once again, he's dealing. Gets the first two outs of the inning. You think nothing is going to be wrong. And maybe this is still one of the knocks on Brady Singer is that he can unravel a bit. In certain innings where a bloop single, you know, goes against the shift, you can tell that it mightily frustrates him. Like, he is not able to just go to the next batter and say, okay, I need to bear down here, get out of this without allowing a run. But to the number nine hitter, Austin Wins, or is it Wins? Wins. Austin Wins, the Giants' second or third string catcher. He gets jammed on the fists, and he rolls a double against the shift into right field because nobody's there at first base, just dribbles one to right field. I bet the exit velo on it was no higher than 85. It was a softly hit ball. And the Giants get a runner at second with two outs. And the camera panned to Brady Singer after that, and he looked visibly frustrated. Because I think any time you give up a hit against the shift, you're frustrated at where the coaches were positioning the players. Now, there's nothing you can do about that. Clearly, I don't know why the Royals are shifting on a third-string catcher. It did cost at one point Brady Singer a no-hitter in Cleveland. In his rookie season, I mean, you go all the way back there, Brady Singer had a no-hitter through 7 2/3 innings, and the Royals had that same type of shift last night on Austin Hedges, who was Cleveland's backup catcher. So the Royals like the shift on anybody, and thankfully the shift is going away soon in baseball because I think it's terrible for the game. I get you want to position your players in where the hitter is hitting it into, but at this point we are going way too far into that. I mean, I get back in the past shifting on David Ortiz, shifting on Prince Fielder, those big guys, the big home run hitting guys, Ryan Howard, Mark Teixeira, though Mark Teixeira was a switch hitter. But now we're shifting against every single hitter in this lineup. So I don't blame Brady Singer for being upset about that because he's probably thinking, man, how does that happen? Backup catcher gets jammed on the fist and he just dribbles it into right field for a double. But it's what transpired after that double. And like I said before, this feels like a problem that's happened to Brady Singer before that he can be dealing. Whether that be through two innings, four innings, six innings, seven innings, then there's one thing that goes wrong. He either walks the number nine hitter, and then it unravels after that. It's just, it's the compound mistakes. But after that double, he walks the next batter. Then he walks the next batter. Then, as we've seen all season long, Cal Eldred comes out to the mound. I don't know at this point who's telling Cal Eldred to go out to the mound, whether it's just him deciding it on a whim or Mike Matheny saying, hey, go talk to him, because it has seriously never worked. A mound visit from Cal Eldred is always resulting in disaster. Grand slam, bases clearing double, a walk, an infield single, something. It's never resulted in an out, basically. And I want to give credit to this guy who did the research and a lot of Royals Twitter accounts that I'm sure all of you follow out there, quote tweet it. But this is from James White at James from Omaha. He tweeted out and said, okay, I wasted too much time on this, but since May 1st, there have been 60 mound visits, pitching changes not included in this. Opponents are slashing 292, 433, 479 with 28 RBIs, 9 walks, and 3 hit-by-pitches. That's when Cal Eldred visited the mound. Since May 1st, so a little over, or I guess a little under a month and a half, Cal Eldred has visited the mound 60 times. And after he visits, opponents are slashing 292, 433, an on-base percentage north of 430, and then a slug of 479. 28 RBIs, 9 walks, 3 hit-by-pitches. So what happened after Cal Eldred visited the mound last night? Brady Singer's control got even worse. Walked the next guy, walked the next guy. He walked 4 consecutive batters to bring in 2 runs. Now, thankfully, got bailed out there on Brandon Crawford where he induced a fly ball to end the inning, and then he got through 5 innings. So still not a bad start by Brady Singer. It didn't unravel like the way it has before. He got through 5 innings, gave up 2 runs on 2 hits, but walked 5. Did strike out 5, but walked 5. That's a number that just, it can't hold up from your starting pitcher, especially not a first-round pick. But the cool thing that I will say about this, and what I think we've been able to see time and time and again this season, that, no, the wins are not being racked up. The pitching staff's been terrible. It's been the worst in baseball. But I could only help but imagine and look at this pitching staff, Brady Singer, Daniel Lynch, Chris Bubich, eventually Jackson Coar joins it, maybe Carlos Hernandez. I truly believe that they have the stuff that another pitching coach from a more successful organization when dealing with pitchers, hell, you find somebody from the Giants, hell, you find Brian Bannister, who has transformed that pitching staff, who transformed Chicago's pitching staff. You look around the league and you can find these guys, and the Royals are not lacking talent on their pitching staff. They have guys with the stuff. I mean, you can look at Daniel Lynch, though his ERA and his opponent's batting average doesn't really provide all the statistics. You can tell that the stuff he possesses, it's good enough to be a number 3 in this rotation. Brady Singer, same thing. You can see the movement he has on his two-seamer, on his slider, and when he's dealing, he can sometimes give you a quality start with just 2 pitches. Now, when he develops that changeup, that only helps his case. But for the last 5 years, not one pitcher has truly been able to evolve into what they could be because they're stunted by Cal Eldred. And it's amazing to me the Royals don't look at it and say, all right, that is our main problem. Because look at the offense. Since they fired Terry Bradshaw and brought in Alex Zumwalt and Mike Tosar, the offense has been better, though it doesn't really seem like it because the Royals aren't winning games. A lot of hitters in this lineup. WRC Plus is now over 100. I mean, Carlos Santana, I think, went from like 25 to 88 with Zumwalt. They are more prepared each night to face an opposing pitcher than they were with Terry Bradshaw. It's an anomaly at this point how Cal Eldred continues to stay in that dugout. Because if Cal Eldred was in year one, if this was the first year and the Royals were 20-40, worst pitching staff in baseball, I think most of us would say, all right, maybe we can't fire a guy 60 games into the season. Cal Eldred has been here, same with Terry Bradshaw, since 2018. Now, Terry Bradshaw was fired, what, a month and a half ago? I think I want to say it was May 17th, though. Exactly a month ago. But Cal Eldred has just stuck around. And I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I don't know what has warranted him to stay. I don't care that it's complicated. Because the only thing at this point that's happening is we're seeing pitchers in this rotation that have the stuff and they can't do much with it, or they can unravel, or they're still walking guys. It's not a shock, folks, that John Heasley had one of the lowest walk rates of anybody pitching down in Omaha and immediately came up and then had one of the highest walk rates of anybody in the starting rotation. I mean, it's that quick. And we've seen Brady Singer down in Omaha, comes up, first two starts, dominated, then had a rough start. And now he's sort of struggling to find his command again. I mean, it just takes a certain amount of time for the influence again in Kansas City to take over on the young pitchers. Chris Bubich, right, I think back-to-back good starts since coming up from Omaha, and he even mentioned in a post-game interview that he was throwing more of his changeup in Omaha. He got more comfortable with it instead of just focusing all the time on the fastball. Now, some guys have thrived, I think, since coming up from Kansas City, but you can't just, I guess, look at one pitcher. You can't look at two pitchers and say, well, that's why. That's why he's still here. And I know Dayton Moore said, well, if you're going to, you know, knock Cal Eldred for Brady Singer and Chris Bubich, well, you better well give him credit for Daniel Lynch. Well, Daniel Lynch has been pretty bad since that comment. Stuff has been there, but that's the frustrating part is you see these pitchers and go, and they have the stuff to be really good. Really, really good. But the Royals are waiting and waiting and waiting and being content with what's going on. Now, we know that no pitching coach this season is going to just completely overhaul the pitching staff. And so if the Royals front office wanted to give the idea of, okay, we're going to come out and say it, Cal Eldred is going to stay here for the rest of the year, but he's not going to be back next year. And then I could understand that sentiment a little bit because maybe you want a new pitching coach from another organization to come in the offseason and work with these pitchers instead of just bringing somebody else up to maybe work with them for a couple of months, and then at the end of the year, it's, okay, they're not going to be the pitching coach next year. They're not working with these pitchers. So I could see that part of it because we don't even know if Alex Zumwalt or Mike Tosar will be the hitting coach and the assistant hitting coach next season. It could be somebody else. It could be a complete overhaul of this coaching staff, and I'd be fine with it. But I just feel like for the remaining parts of this season, it can't get much worse in terms of a developmental process than it is right now with Cal Eldred. Now, I know I brought up the Buddy Bill quote that it can't get much worse. Well, I'm sorry, it statistically can't. They have the worst pitching staff in baseball. ERA, walks per nine. I want him to say opponent's batting average. If not, they're two spots above last place. So that's the frustrating part, is that the Royals view that. They see the losses. They see this pitching staff struggling, and nothing's being done about it. So if that's going to be the message moving forward, well, it's going to be hard to find a lot of free agents, a lot of draft picks to buy into a process in which they really don't care about how you're performing. Because Brady Singer last night got through five innings on talent alone. He was able to walk five and still only give up two earned runs in five innings. But the Royals lost the game 6-2. So it's when you look at these type of starts, right, and you can say, okay, well, Brady Singer didn't have that bad of a start. Yes, but it can be so much better. I mean, the Royals rotation can't be having their top guys walk five or six or seven a night. That's not good. They don't throw strikes. And that's been a reoccurring problem since Cal Eldred's been there. It felt like Dave Island left. Cal Eldred came in, and the Royals just never threw strikes again. They never could. Not in high leverage, not even when they're rolling. And it took one batter to get them off their rhythm. Four-pitch walk, then a hit, then another walk, then a bases-clearing double, then another walk. They just never could recover from that. And you want to hope that the Royals front office is actively looking into that and actively trying to find somebody out there from one of these top organizations. I mean, I don't think you have to look much further than what San Francisco is doing. They have completely overhauled their pitching staff. They took Jake Junis, who the Royals non-tendered because he clearly, I guess, wasn't good enough to pitch in Kansas City, and now was a number three starter for the San Francisco Giants, who won the most games in baseball last year before he got hurt. And now he's on the IL, but I'd expect Jake Junis to be back at some point. But the point being, Junis completely changed everything and started succeeding just like that. That's telling to the organization. And you've heard us say this before that, I mean, we've seen Jorge Lopez, who was borderline the worst pitcher in the Royals starting rotation and bullpen in 2019. The numbers were terrible. Now, he had that one game where he nearly had a perfect game in Minnesota, but after that, before that, there wasn't much to Jorge Lopez. And then he goes to Baltimore, a team that we thought, at least for a while, record-wise, was just going to be worse than the Royals. They had no talent on that team. Well, Jorge Lopez now has an ERA under 1 and is the closer for the Orioles. And he was great over the weekend against Kansas City. And we always knew he had the stuff, but what was the problem? He couldn't throw strikes. That feels like a problem with Cal Eldred. I don't know if it's the pitches they're telling him to throw. Get back in the zone with your fastball. Try something else. But it's not working. And other pitchers out there are succeeding. And maybe that should be an easy fix, that just go to the organizations that took your players and made them better and maybe try to pry somebody from their organization, from their minor league system, from their assistant pitching coach spot. Like, you can go around the league and find these guys. You can go to Tampa Bay. You can go to San Francisco. You could go to, hell, Oakland. Oakland's not even a good team this year, but they have a better record than the Royals, and they actively are trying to lose games. You could go to the White Sox. Okay, you could go to, hell, find somebody with the Mets. You could try to find somebody that's, you know, dealing with pitchers that have high velocity, good movement, but really need to find a way to harness it in and find the zone. Because the Royals don't have anybody at the major league level that is helping them find the zone. I mean, last night, usually it feels like when a pitching coach visits the mound, it is followed by somebody getting right back in the zone. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't have the numbers on Dave Island's career in Kansas City right in front of me, and I don't have it exactly what the first pitch was following a Dave Island mound visit, but it feels like, just based off my memory and watching those games, anytime Dave Island visited the mound, the next pitch, right over the middle of the plate. Now, in a good spot, I think I probably shouldn't say right over the middle of the plate, but located it well, and he got ahead in the count. Last night, after Cal Eldred had that mound visit, Brady Singer was even further from the zone. I mean, missing every spot. If MJ Melendez set up outside, he missed down and in. If he set up down and in, he missed high and away. It just was so hard to watch, because you could tell Brady Singer was just, he had no feel for the ball at that point. And you felt like he was going to go from a start in which the first two innings were great, and then he was going to be pulled in the third because he just couldn't find the zone again. I mean, Daniel Megden, who was called up earlier that day, or maybe it was the day before, he was warming up in the third after Brady Singer had cruised through two, and it all came apart in the third. I mean, those are things you have to look into. You have to find reasons why Cal Eldred is still on this team. You have to convince the fan base, convince anybody around the league why he's still there. If you can give an honest truth to that, maybe the fan base and those still going to the games can maybe see your path a little bit. But the Royals don't ever give that honest answer. They'll just say, well, you know, Cal Eldred, he's still doing a good job. And even I want to say J.J. Piccolo mentioned something a couple weeks ago that, you know, look at the success of, who was it, Brad Keller? Look at the success of somebody in the rotation, or John Heasley, it might have been. We can't look at one pitcher that's not even really succeeding to the extent of what we think it is. Like, we don't have a Clayton Kershaw on this staff like Dayton Moore believes Daniel Lynch was, or compared to the early struggles of Clayton Kershaw, who then won Cy Young, I want to say his second or third year in the league. Like, you can't make those comparisons. Now, Daniel Lynch can still be a damn good pitcher. I think most of the guys on the staff can be really good pitchers in the major league level. It just can't come with that type of coaching staff. And if the Royals want to wait till the end of the year, then okay. Just come out and say it. I know that's tough to do, but come on, find a way to say, we're sticking with this coaching staff till the end of the year, but we're going to reevaluate in this offseason. I think I'd be okay with that. I could watch the games being less frustrated if there was just some honesty to it. Because I don't think any other team in baseball right now would still have Cal Eldred on their pitching staff in year 5 and having the worst pitching staff statistically in baseball. It just doesn't make too much sense. And as I wanted to say, I think it was 2, maybe 3 weeks ago that I mentioned I'm not going to raise my voice about the Royals anymore because they've sort of settled into this complacency, and they settled into complacency about a month and a half ago. I mean, why should we give much effort in getting angry about a team that doesn't even get angry at their production? I mean, it's clear they could lie and say, well, no, we are frustrated with how things are going. Well, frustration is about action, reacting to what's going on. You know, if you're really frustrated, if you want to have that accountability, it's about fixing those mistakes. The Royals don't fix those mistakes. They have yet to fix any of those mistakes aside from the hitting problem. And the hitting problem still isn't resulting in wins. So, with that being said, if this is the way the Royals want to play all season long, then okay, but you have to be honest and say, well, it's not going to be acceptable next year. So we are going to reevaluate everybody on this coaching staff at season's end. Do I expect them to do it? I mean, I expect them to do a lot of things, but they never do pull through. So we'll have to wait and see at the season's end if the Royals will actually make some moves with this coaching staff. Now, Marco, we've talked about this before, and I'll say, well, did you watch the game last night? And you're like, well, I didn't really feel the need to. And if the NBA Finals was on last night, I wouldn't have blamed you one bit. It was a late first pitch. I knew from the third inning on game was over.
No, Jack, I tried to tune in after the basketball game last night because I think it was still 2-2 or 3-2. Mm-hmm. Game wasn't out of reach yet. I was up, and... go to Bally Sports app.
A phenomenal app. It's just also fitting, isn't it?
Sorry, you are not. You can't view this game in your broadcast area. Well, Bally, that's pretty weird because I can watch it on my laptop. If I had the cable in my room, which I don't, I could go down to my basement living room and watch it there on my cable. Why is it when I enter my cable information on the Xbox app? Maybe it's the Microsoft app. Bally just assumes people with Xboxes don't watch or use the Bally Sports app, whatever. It doesn't allow me to view it. So I didn't. I just said, screw it, Bally. I'm going to bed. Because by the time I had tried to find a stream, all that, it was out of hand. It went from 3-2 to 6-2, and at that point, what's the point of turning into the Royals, tuning into the Royals game? I was following along on Twitter during the basketball game, of course, which you touched on with your monologue. It's what all of Twitter was talking about yesterday. It's one of those things with the Royals where I am, and this is where the people who follow them, and thank goodness they tweet out information and do the research. Just when you think that all the stats have been put out there about how bad this Royals team, specifically with the pitching, has been this year, there's even more. And you start seeing comparisons to this with the team's ERA being one of the highest since the 2003-2006 Pittsburgh Pirates. It's just, like you said, we need an explanation. You can't go a month without... it's almost been a month. We're getting to the point where we last heard from Dayton Moore and J.J. Piccolo. I think they spoke in May 15th, May 16th. We are approaching a month ever since they made those comments, and since then, the Royals have hit the fan, and it's gone down rather quick. The season's trajectory, it's plummeting right now, because ever since then we've been hearing historic. The word historic and record-breaking in bad ways. Not the ways that you would want to be mentioned with words like that. So at some point, are we going to keep going down? Because as far as I know, it can keep going down. They have not reached rock bottom. They are still playing historically bad baseball, and the numbers, the research, it will continue to come out with new information just how bad this team is. The only bright spot I've seen is around Bobby Witt Jr. And as should. He's leading the team in almost every hitting category right now. That's great. That's excellent. But once again, this is not a one-player sport. You need a team. You need a coaching staff. You need coaches that can instill confidence in their pitchers. Not instill, but have the coaching style be the type of coach that players either are listening to or not listening to. And after the mound visit last night, I want to say Brady Singer was listening to Cal Eldridge because Singer has shown us that he's more open with the advice now and doing things differently. So when you have players like that taking the advice given to you and using it, and the results are toilet water, you start that trust in the sought out to for advice kind of goes away. That action of players going to the coaching staff, because it's just how do you, I'm not going to say respect because I think that's too strong of a word here, but when a pitching coach has been on the staff for 5 years now. This is fifth season with Kyle Eldridge, and it's been nothing but just poor pitching. When do you start to just brush them off? When those mound visits, they just become useless timeouts in the game, just dead time. It's one of those things where outside of Singer, I don't know who's listening to Cal Eldridge. If they are, if they even are listening to the input that he's giving, because again, at the end of the day, the pitchers themselves have to go out there and what they're displaying hasn't been great. But if he's not going to fix it, and the players can't go out there and perform, even without, obviously they need guidance, and Eldridge cannot provide the guidance that can turn around this, that can help turn around the bullpen, the rotation, because we haven't seen any turnaround with the pitching in 5 years. It's been bad. It's been bad year in and year out ever since he became the pitching coach. And at some point, you got to stop giving people chances. At some point, you got to try something new. And until they can start taking those steps in the right direction, because really there hasn't been no change of how the Royals operate. And there's a lot of things about this organization that could use some change, but one of the most obvious ones right now is a change at the pitching coach and a change at how the pitchers are performing. So right now it seems things are helpless, and Royals have no problem not looking for any help at this time. Because it's been 5 years, man. I didn't realize how long he's been on the pitching staff for. And when you think about it, it's like, yeah, crap. Royals pitching hasn't really been respectable or good since 2016, before he started dishing out, you know, back when Rosenthal was still thrown out of the pen for these guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's in this situation, when you look at Cal Eldridge taking over this pitching staff in 2018, I mean, yeah, it hasn't gotten better. And I think one of the things you can look at is what are the personalities like for these pitchers? Because they're all young guys, and I think that's probably why Cal Eldred's still here, is that the front office views it as these are a lot of young guys. They have to go through struggles, and Cal Eldred can't just, you know, be the guy to fall on the sword. They need to develop properly. Well, they're not developing properly. But you look at the personalities, right? They're not going to go out and speak against Cal Eldred. Like, they're not going to be asked in a post-game interview, you know, do you even listen to Cal Eldred anymore? Well, of course they're going to say yes. They don't want to be thrown under a bus and then have to be with the pitching coach that they've just badmouthed. But there's just no flair. There's no flair from anybody in the starting rotation. It doesn't look like there's a ton of confidence. Not saying they're not confident guys, but I mean, it'd be tough to be a confident pitcher out there when you know that your stuff just isn't working right now, and that maybe next year, if there's a new man in charge, I can already guarantee you what's going to happen. When they are asked about how the new pitching coach is, they're going to subtly say some things like, it's a different environment here, there's a different atmosphere, we are being taught to do this more and this more and this more, and that's going to be our telling sign that back when Cal Eldred was there, it was tough to maybe connect with that type of pitching coach. But we'll have to see if that pitching coach change is going to happen this year or maybe in the offseason. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk some NBA Finals as the Warriors moved up 3-2 on the Boston Celtics. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. So there was some breaking news this morning. Mark already got the chance to talk about it on the Border Patrol over here right next door at 8:10. But I think it's interesting because we were talking about pizza during the break, and the NFL's pizza sponsor is no longer Pizza Hut. It is going to be Little Caesars, which now I imagine the Little Caesars Superdome is, I wonder how that, they're just, Little Caesars, I guess, is doing it right. Not only are they sponsoring one of the most well-known stadiums in the NFL, they're now sponsoring the NFL as the main pizza. But I don't know, I guess we get into debate about that. What's the right pizza choice to sponsor the NFL? The main large chain ones you'd have is Pizza Hut, Little Caesars, Papa John's, which Papa John's just simply can't at this point.
Yeah. They were the sponsor, and then they
were, and then good old Papa John got in trouble. But apparently the Day of Reckoning is still coming, which I think we're all waiting for and what happens with that. But Little Caesars, I have no issue with. I just wonder how Pizza Hut lost their sponsorship. Because I always thought Pizza Hut, at least Pizza Hut and Papa John's to me growing up, those were just the two largest companies out there for pizza. Whether you liked them or not, the quality may not have been as good as like for here in Kansas City. Like I love Minsky's Pizza. But Minsky's can't sponsor the NFL. Mm-hmm. So I guess, I mean, good for Little Caesars. I still like their pizza. I don't really have one very close by to me. But, yeah, I wonder how Pizza Hut lost it. So this will have to be the third pizza sponsoring the NFL now. So it went from Papa John's to Pizza Hut to Little Caesars.
Yeah, yep.
See how long Little Caesars can hold it. I think they had an announcement. Or they had a statement about taking over as a sponsor. I mean, man, I didn't even really think for a long time that Little Caesars had that type of power, had that type of pull to be one of the main sponsors of the NFL. But yeah, Little Caesars, okay, it's too long to read. I'm not going to go through that entire statement from Little Caesars. But Little Caesars is now the new official pizza sponsor of the NFL. The fastest growing pizza chain enters high-profile partnership with the National Football League. So we'll see what they'll do with that. But I guess now for your Super Bowl parties, do not order Pizza Hut. Order Little Caesars. But yeah, that was just a weird breaking news story, and that's really just NFL offseason talk, right? We're waiting for training camp, so now we got to talk about pizza sponsors for the NFL.
Well, that is big news because now we're going to start seeing some Little Caesars pizza, Little Caesars commercials.
They have better commercials, I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
Little Caesars used to have that one jingle, you know, like no better, like so you've seen The Office, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know that I think it's the nobody else has the when they're doing the what do they call it? It's like a lip sync thing. It was like to open up season 7. Like nobody else.
It was a lip sync montage.
Lip sync montage. Yeah. Little Caesars did one too. It's one of their commercials. It's like nobody else has the prices like we do. Nobody saves you the money. Yeah, look it up. After the show, we'll look it up and I'll show you exactly what it is. And I hope they do commercials like that. But it's for another time, another place, because now we talk some NBA finals as the Golden State Warriors, as I predicted, as Marco predicted, would win game 5 in San Francisco, and they did that by a score of 104-94, covering that 3.5-point spread. It was not Steph Curry that won the game for the Golden State Warriors. It was not Klay Thompson. It was not Draymond Green. It was not Jordan Poole. It was KU alum. I guess you can't really call him KU alum because I don't think Wiggins has graduated yet, but KU product Andrew Wiggins, who had 26 points on 12 of 23 shooting, 13 rebounds again. I don't know what's gotten into Andrew Wiggins in terms of rebounding the basketball, but he's been phenomenal, right? He had the game on game 4 when he had 15 or 16. I mean, he has really been good at rebounding the basketball. We always knew that at KU, he had that great second jump where he always was there around the rim and just out-jumped everybody else. And though you may have your different opinions on how Andrew Wiggins was at Kansas, he is thriving in this role for Golden State. And it is refreshing to see because when he came to Kansas, right, he had to take that famous photo that it was kind of comparing him to Wilt Chamberlain when Wilt Chamberlain was putting on his shoes. And KU has a very famous photo of that. And they made Andrew Wiggins recreate that. He had the nod of being the next LeBron James, right? He was just this phenom out of high school, the highest ranked recruit Kansas has ever had. And then he got to the NBA. He was a top draft pick, went to Minnesota, put up numbers, but Minnesota wasn't very good. And Andrew Wiggins then got labeled as kind of being not necessarily a bust, but a guy that was kind of passive, didn't really want to be there, and who could blame him? I mean, they weren't winning many games. Then he bounces over to Golden State. And since being at Golden State, I think it's been just a much better spot. And you've seen a more emotional Andrew Wiggins. I mean, he's now talking some trash. You know, he's kind of shoulder shimmying guys. He's pushing guys off. I mean, that's cool to see from a guy that, for the most part of his career, college and the NBA, he was very quiet, very reserved. Wasn't going to say too much. And now you're kind of seeing that passion, that flair, and how could you not be? He's one win away from getting his first NBA ring, and he's doing it in a massive role, right? He's not a guy coming off the bench just being this cool story to aid or help Steph Curry or Klay Thompson or Draymond Green. No, he's winning them games. Last night, he won that game individually for the Golden State Warriors. Now, on the other side for Boston, I mean, we know this defense is near the top in the league. It was an elite defense. The problem is they're just not getting the type of performances from Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown anymore. Jason Tatum put up the points last night, but he had 27 points on 50% shooting from the floor, negative 13 in the plus-minus Jaylen Brown, negative 19, the plus minus. They're not playing good enough at this point to overcome not even a 3-2 deficit. They'll go back to the Garden. Golden State will try to put away this series on Thursday at the Garden. Game 7, if it does happen, will take place on Sunday. So it will be wrapped up this week. We will know the winner of the NBA season by the end of this week, whether that be on Thursday or on Sunday. But yeah, Andrew Wiggins was the star last night, and he's been a star in this postseason. And those, if it wasn't for Steph Curry being nuclear or going nuclear in a couple games in this series, you could have made a case that Andrew Wiggins might have entered his name in the conversation of being an NBA Finals MVP, which I think a couple years back, not many of us would have predicted. Like I said, Andrew Wiggins would put up 20-plus points a season, but it was just this idea that he could have been more than that. He could have been a guy averaging upper 20s, maybe early 30s, because of the hype that he got coming out of high school. And now, he's at least one win away from probably going after something he's always dreamed of having, an NBA ring. And maybe Andrew Wiggins down the road, he stays in Golden State for the rest of his career, or he plays out the rest of his contract and then gets some big money elsewhere, wins another one. Right now, he's in the best spot imaginable with the Golden State Warriors, as they are now just one game away from taking on the Boston Celtics and winning yet another NBA championship. All right, we're going to take one quick final break. When we come back, we'll wrap it up with some fact or fiction. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. You know, I did want to get to this because we do have some time, actually, still about 7-ish minutes until we have to get to some fact or fiction. So, with the little time we have left, we are going to continue our segments of sports movies. Do they hold up today? So I'm going to see if I can get at least two today, but I'll open up quickly to you, Mark. I'm not going to get into too much in depth on my opinions of the movie. I'll at least give a little snippet of what I believe it to be. But we're going to start it off with this one. Now, first of all, I have to see if you have actually seen the movie. Let's do A League of Their Own. Have you seen A League of Their Own?
Yes, I have. Yep.
How long?
Man, it's in the memory bank.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you how long, but I did see that they have a TV series out on Amazon Prime.
Really?
Yes.
I thought I mentioned. I wonder who's playing Tom Hanks then.
Let's see.
Or Tom Hanks' character. Jimmy Dugan. That's right. That was the name of the manager. But A League of Their Own, 1992, 2 hours and 8 minutes. Rotten Tomatoes gave it an 80%. Metacritic, a 69%. As America's stock of athletic young men is depleted during World War II, a professional all-female baseball league springs up in the Midwest, funded by publicly hungry candy maker Walter Harvey. So then you also have some famous actors in this one. Gina Davis plays Dottie Henson. Tom Hanks plays Jimmy Dugan. Madonna. I always forget that Madonna was in that movie. Madonna played May.
Yeah.
Morta Beto. Lori Petty plays Kit Keller. Rosie O'Donnell plays Doris Murphy. It has been a very long time since I've seen this movie, but I always thought it was a fun and, I guess, storytelling type of movie, and I guess storytelling's in every single movie, but you kind of get what I mean. Lighthearted fun, but also a true story that not many people knew about, I think, before that movie came out, especially if you were, you know, younger back in 1992, weren't born. I mean, I watched it probably in the mid-2000s, so 13 to 15 years after it already come out. I mean, it's a cool movie and a lot of famous actors in it, and it's interesting because, like, it happened in World War II, right? There was a lot of young men that were off fighting in the war. So they needed ways to, I guess, fill in sports. They needed to find ways to find people who could play and that were good enough, and there were a lot of females at the time that never got the chance to showcase their skills because that just wasn't allowed back then. But in A League of Their Own, and there were some phenomenal baseball players, and I think that's kind of what it tried to show. And it's funny that Tom Hanks, who plays Jimmy Dugan, like, he's still this hardened manager that kind of seems like he's just used to managing men, and not all the girls are used to that. Now, like, Rosie O'Donnell's character, who it's I just said who it was.
Vi?
No, not Vi. Was it? It's not Dorothy, is it? Oh, I just had it. But anyway, she's kind of more of the hard ass, for lack of a better term. Doris is her name. But then, like, a Madonna's character, I think, is the one that starts crying, and there's no crying in baseball, the very famous quote
yep.
that all of us were told when we were younger playing baseball. But I think it still holds up today because it's historical, it's funny, and it's a life lesson type of story that this really went on, and this was kind of the chance for women to show that they could play baseball and play it well. So what about you, Marco? It still holds up today?
Yeah, Yeah, because it's a historical film. Teaches you, like you just talked about, you talked about there, teaches you a part of the U.S. history. Because, like you said, the men went off to war, and the women stepped up, played the game, took over the factories, worked in the factories. So yeah, it tells an important part of American history. And let's see, it teaches you not to slide with shorts on, because ooh, that hurts.
Oh yeah,
make sure. And like, you ever slid in baseball pants without some slide, without your sliding shorts?
Incredibly painful.
We'll leave a mark. So and the fact that they're making a comedy series that drops in August on Amazon Prime, I think goes to show that it does hold up today.
And then last one I want to do real quickly, and this one will be tough to convince people that it holds up today because it's a childhood movie favorite of mine, Space Jam. 1996, hour and 40 minutes long. Rotten Tomatoes give it a 44%, Metacritic a 59%. Michael Jordan playing himself in the movie, and then you obviously have all the cast of the Looney Tunes. Danny DeVito plays Swackhammer, who was obviously the villain that if Michael Jordan lost with the Looney Tunes squad, the Toon Squad, that Michael Jordan would have to play, or not, it wasn't even play, he'd be chained up in this Looney Tune world, and kids would come to pay Swackhammer to score on Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan could never escape it. I think that was the deal, that if he lost, he had to stay in the Looney Tune world, and he'd be like chained up right on the goal, yep, and kids would pay Swackhammer and be like, oh, I can go score on Michael Jordan, so he'd be tortured for eternity, basically. But Michael Jordan comes in, he enters the Looney Tune world from a golf course, right? Because Michael Jordan at the time, he's playing golf, I think he hits a hole-in-one because the ball gets grabbed by Bugs Bunny or something, and he looks down the hole, falls down the hole, enters, is it called him? It's not Looney Tune World. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's Toon World.
Toon World, not Toontown like the old computer game.
Yeah, it's not Toontown. But as we've all seen, I think growing up, it was a fun childhood movie. But I know a lot of people out there that do not like Space Jam because the acting was so bad from Michael Jordan. And it was cheesy CGI. But you know what? When you're 5 or 6 years old watching Space Jam, it's cool to see. Now, they came out with the recreation of it with LeBron James. I didn't watch it. Did you watch that one? The new Space Jam?
Yes, I did.
Was that any good?
No.
Okay.
No.
I had heard that it was not very good, but
Michael,
I guess
the GOAT comparison or the GOAT debate will stand the test of time, but it's no debate that Michael Jordan's a better actor than LeBron.
Yeah, I feel like that, which, like, LeBron had been pretty good in some commercials, but I think for a full movie, it seemed like that was the biggest criticism of the movie, is that it didn't seem natural. Now, you may feel like Michael Jordan's acting was not good, but there were so many memorable parts in that movie. And obviously, like, Michael's juice when he's just normal water, or it's the Michael's, I think it's Michael's juice in the movie. Gosh, it's been way too long since I've seen that movie. But Bugs and all the Looney Tune characters, they drink the juice, and then they play much better in the second half, overcoming like a 150-point deficit to the Monstars. I also loved that it was Charles Barkley, Muggsy Bogues, Larry Johnson. Oh, who else was it? Was it Chris Mullin? No, it was
Patrick Ewing,
and there's one more. It's the tall white guy. He was the last Monstar they took the power from.
Not the guy from the Nets, was it?
I don't think so. Oh, it was some tall guy, because he was the goofy one, right? They really slandered him in the movie because that alien was just the tall, goofy one with the buck teeth. That was like the doofus of the Monstars.
Yeah, he was with the funny haircut, Sean Bradley.
Sean Bradley. Gosh, I don't know. I couldn't remember that. So it was those five. They stole the talent. Then they played the Looney Tunes squad. Michael Jordan won on the ridiculous, like, outstretched arm Looney Tune dunk. And you know what? It was an enjoyable for a kid. It's a very enjoyable movie because you probably liked Looney Tunes. And then you also enjoyed watching basketball and you liked watching Michael Jordan. So honestly, for me, that might have been my first memory of Michael Jordan. I'd see that movie, because I probably watched the movie when I was 3 or something like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't really watch Michael Jordan on the Wizards at that point. So I would think that might have been my first memory. Was that your first memory of Michael Jordan with Space Jam, or do you slightly remember him playing for the Wizards at the time?
No, that would have been it right there.
I was going to say, I think you and I are both around the same age where that's where we remember Michael Jordan from. Now, I quickly learned I should not refer to Michael Jordan as the Space Jam player. And you had to learn that he was one of the greatest, if not the greatest of all time. But I'm going to say that it does hold up for children. But clearly the new one, it's not going to hold up for long. I'm going to say that if you were to show this to a child, it can hold up. If I watched today's my age, I'd be like, oh, this is a pretty rough movie.
Yeah, I could imagine parents everywhere that took their kids in a new one were very disappointed. Yeah. It's unwatchable. There's no reason to go back and watch it again.
I kind of want to watch it now just because it's so unwatchable according to you. Because most of these we've agreed on of like, oh, it holds up because we hold them near and dear to our heart. But maybe the new one with LeBron James just will never
Doesn't make sense.
Be held in the heart. Well, that's what I heard. Anthony Davis is in it. Damian Lillard.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan
Taurasi, Sue Bird, and I think Lisa Leslie, maybe? Maybe not.
Just the same type of story, too. They fell behind by a lot, overcame it. No change to that storyline. But anyways, right. I'm going to say at least holds up for children, not so much for me. I think you just kind of said the same thing, Marco. But those were our two movies of the day. And with that, we'll now switch it over to some fact or fiction. Five questions, five takes in under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
Fact or fiction, the Royals pitcher is finished with the worst ERA in baseball.
Fact, as long as Cal Edwards is there, this pitching staff will never be able to climb out of the basement of the worst ERA in baseball.
If fired, Cal Edwards, or leaves, never coaches in Major League Baseball after this season.
It would be hilarious if Cal Edwards went, like, had another job elsewhere and then just thrived with that pitching staff. It's not going to happen. If Cal Edwards is fired with the Royals, he will not manage in major or not be a pitching coach anywhere in Major League Baseball for the rest of it. He's also an older guy too, so I'm going to go fact on that he'll never manage be a pitching coach in baseball. Keep starting to say manage.
Two-parter here. Andrew Wiggins leads the Warriors in scoring in Game 6 and wins his first ring.
Fiction on the first part. I don't think he'll lead them in scoring in Game 6. I'm sure Steph Curry will. Again, I think Steph Curry had an off night. I'm not going to expect back-to-back off nights for Steph Curry, but fact, I do think he wins his first ring because they will end this series in Boston at the Garden on Thursday night.
Fact or fiction, Aaron Judge wins AL MVP.
Ooh, boy. He's on the best team right now. I feel like he is thriving at this point where he's playing for that contract. It's still too early to tell, though, right now. I don't want to jump on the bandwagon of picking a Yankee to win the AL MVP, so I'll go fiction for now. I'm going to wait and see a couple more weeks.
And lastly, fact or fiction, the White Sox miss the postseason.
Boy, they are a disaster right now. They are one of the most shocking stories in baseball this year. They're 3 games under 500. They won last night, but they're having problems in their own clubhouse. Tim Anderson was in the news last night, or I think yesterday afternoon. Now, he got caught cheating on his wife, at least it appears. So that's something to follow there. I don't want to get too much into the story because we're out of time, but I'm going to go, fiction. I think they're behind Cleveland and Minnesota for the time being. But a lot of problems even off the field right now for the White Sox, and I don't see it getting much better. There's Ray Charles, so it's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 AM. You take it easy, Kansas City.